health and wellness is the ultimate productivity hack. When you have better health, when you have better fitness, it really enables you to do everything else better.
Hey, podcast listener, even if you are alone in your entrepreneurial journey, know that today, right now in your earbuds, you are joined by thousands of entrepreneurs from all around the globe seeking to grow better, more profitable, location-independent businesses. If you'd like to learn more about what we do and download our entire back catalog, check out tropicalmba.com.
Happy Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Welcome back to the podcast, boss man.
Yo, what's going on?
How you doing? Looking fresh.
Oh, looking fresh. Fresh off the stomach flu yesterday. Let me tell you. Wow.
That's always good for the LBs.
That's right. That's it. I was sitting there sweating through the sheets thinking, man, this is better than any diet program I could have gone on.
That's right. That's good for one loop on the belt, you know? Speaking of one loop on the belt, Ian, today we have an incredible guest. I so enjoyed this interview. I want to set it up a little bit for you. Today's guest is Adam Gilbert. He is the founder of My Body Tutor, which is a business that helps people achieve remarkable health outcomes. The way they do it is they charge a monthly fee starting at $300 a month, Ian, and going the whole way up to $900 a month. My Body Tutor helps people ambitious about their health and fitness develop a plan and be held accountable to a real life person. So when you reach into the cookie jar at midnight, it's pretty easy to do when you don't have to tell anybody about it. Everybody's asleep.
Yep.
No one's going to notice that one cookie's gone and you might just grab one. But if you know you have to tell a health and fitness expert that you reached into the cookie jar at midnight, well, you might think twice. That is one of the fundamental insights that Adam has used to create this incredible business. Wait for it, Ian. They have a team of 5 executives and 75 coaches. So My Body Tutor is a very significant business. Adam has done incredibly well for himself, and he's come by the show today to share with us how he's done it. We have recently launched a coaching program, and so I am curious about how Adam's done it. And I want to share just at the top here some things to look for in the interview. The first is typically when we think of people looking to make a big life change, we think that they fear failure. But one of Adam's fundamental insights is actually people often have a significant fear of success. And this really took me aback, Ian, because at first I was like, why would you have fear of success? You know, I have a $500,000 business. I want to get to $2 million. What is so bad about that? Often we have fears with what we think the plan will be, all the actions in the plan and figuring it out and breaking it down and seeing if there's any emotions or negative thoughts we have associated with what we think the implications of the plan will be.
Yeah. So for example, no one that I've met lately is afraid of $2 million, but a lot of people I've met, if you nailed them down to it, they would be afraid to the amount of work that it takes to get to $2 million for the execution of the plan, because that might disrupt their lifestyle, their current business, their family, et cetera.
So one of the key takeaways I took to the team immediately was the goals are great, but having the credible, falsifiable, clear plans that are associated with those goals, that's where all the action is. The other thing Adam brings up is this concept that there's two types of businesses out there. There's mission-driven businesses and there's opportunity-driven businesses. And one's not necessarily better than the other, but man, I walked away thinking, what an opportunity it is to have a mission-driven business, because it really can drive down your costs. It's a lot easier to retain clients because his clients are on board with his mission. They drive down his marketing costs because they go out and talk about My Body Tutor to their friends. In fact, I was telling him the story, like, I've hung around multiple friends now that are literally on the phone with their body tutor, and they're like, you got to get one of these too. That can be a part of the benefit of selecting to go mission-driven versus opportunity-driven.
Dan, of course you remember when we started this business over 10 years ago, we had interns. And these interns would fly to tropical locations and work for our company at a fraction of the cost we could hire them otherwise on the market, because we had a mission. It was called the TMBA internships. And that was the way that basically we bootstrapped our product business.
Yeah, 100%. The mission is bigger than the opportunity. And the mission was always, let's build incredible sources of wealth from our laptops. Ian, this interview wasn't completely arbitrary. Part of the reason we wanted to have Adam on the show today is he's built an incredible mission-driven coaching organization that scales and that is extremely profitable. He's been in the game for 17 years. We want to do the same thing with the DC and specifically DC Accelerator, which we launched last week. We're already seeing the applications come in for that. It's super exciting to see founders that want to get to seven figures. And for those of you that already have seven or eight figure businesses, just want to shout out that DC Black is open for applications. If you want to join a high level mastermind, or I think on our landing page, we say, sick of being the biggest business in your mastermind. If you're looking to join a group of peers, there's over 100 of us right now running seven and eight figure businesses. We're opening applications for the second half of 2024. So just click through on your phone. We have landing pages for both DC Accelerator and DC Black. We'd love to have you. And honestly, a lot of what Adam talks about today, the reason we're talking to him today is as inspiration and guidance for us following in his footsteps. So without further ado, Ian, let's roll this interview with Adam Gilbert, the founder of My Body Tutor. All right, Adam, we should prioritize this idea of health and wellness. Why?
Health and wellness is the ultimate productivity hack. When you have better health, when you have better fitness, it really enables you to do everything else better, right? You have more energy, more focus, more clarity, more endurance. And it really is the one thing that, when improved, impacts every other aspect of your life. And when you don't have it, it also detracts from everything, right? We've all heard the old, when you have your health, you have unlimited wishes. When you don't have your health, you have one wish. And I've seen too many business owners prioritize success over their health. But when you really ask yourself, success at the expense of your health isn't really success, is it?
The surprising thing, when I've heard you speak about this in the past, is that you don't talk about the details. You talk about the why. The whys people aren't healthier. And you bring up this idea of that they're fearful of a sort of success. And I thought that that was a shocking idea. And I'm wondering if you could unpack that for us a little bit.
Sure. I think self-sabotage is when we fear the very thing we say we want to accomplish. When you talk about someone who wants to lose weight or improve their health, or even someone who wants to improve their business, let's just use a business owner as an example. Every business owner, at least the ones I know, on some level, feel like they have a ton of responsibility. They feel like they have the weight of the world on their shoulders. They feel like they have very little free time. So consciously or subconsciously, they feel like if they get busier, if they're able to serve more people, which they claim they want to do, which we all want to do, their life is going to get worse off, right? So they can read the best books in the world, listen to the best podcasts like this, courses, all sorts of stuff. But on some level, if they feel like their life is going to be worse off when they grow their business, then they're constantly going to be sabotaging. They're always going to be having their foot on the brake versus the accelerator. And until you have the people, the processes, the systems in place to grow, you're going to continue to do that. So let's go back to the health and fitness example. On some level, if you feel like your life is going to be worse off when you're more healthy, when you're healthier, when you're fitter, you're going to sabotage yourself, right? So it's really important to understand your mental roadblocks, right? So for some people, they feel like if they lose weight, they're going to have to exercise for hours a day, or they're never going to be able to enjoy their favorite foods, or they're not going to be that fun person anymore. Whatever it might be, they have all sorts of stories and narratives in their head that they create to protect themselves, to do the easiest thing of all, which is nothing. So one of the things we do with our clients is we challenge those assumptions, and almost always they are assumptions, right? So for example, in order to lose weight, you do not only have to eat chicken and lettuce, right? You can still enjoy your favorite foods, right? You don't have to be at the gym for hours a day. In fact, you don't have to be at the gym at all. So these are the types of things we help our clients uncover, because that fear of success is often more powerful and debilitating than the fear of failure.
That's a really stunning idea to me, because it rings true, yet it's hard to understand, uncover examples in yourself, because I don't identify with someone who's scared of success because I talk about it all the time. I say I want to be successful, so therefore I identify with that. I'm curious, do you have a story in your mind of someone doing that from a business perspective?
From a business perspective, yeah. I mean, it was me. So for many years, so this is year 17 for us. I started this in 2007. For many years, I was doing almost everything, and especially with coaching, right? So I am maniacal when it comes to excellent coaching. I want people to have an amazing experience. And for years, I was the only one doing the coaching, and I was the bottleneck because people were signing up. People wanted to work with us, and I wanted to be their coach. And I was the bottleneck in the business. There was no question about it. And it wasn't until I met Haley, who now is our head coach, who I know she's a world-class coach, that I fully trusted in her to help build out our coaching family of coaches, that I was able to let go a little bit. There was years where I was like, I want to grow. I want to serve more people. I believe in what we do more than anything. And I really did. But there was also this other side of me. There was this inner conflict of, well, I don't trust anyone to serve these people.
It's almost like success is a vague concept. So unless you flesh it out in your mind, you're connecting caveats to success that they're sort of like weights that drag it down. And in yes. your case, it was, I want success, but I am the only person that can coach to the level of quality that I expect. Therefore, success that you're dreaming of will not happen so long as you connect the two.
Exactly. And once I was able to reconcile that difference, and once I was able to put the people, or in this case, the person, and we developed a system that I trust immensely, once that was done and figured out, then it was like, all right, the sky's the limit.
You've coached how many people? I mean, an extraordinary amount of people. Do you have a round number?
At this point, it's got to be well over 8,000, 9,000 people.
9,000 people helped get healthier and fitter. What are those assumptions and connections, the most common ones that they're making?
Well, I mean, the big thing we solve for our clients is consistency. That is the hard part. It's very easy to start all kinds of diets and plans. It's very easy to start all kinds of business initiatives, but the follow through is where the magic happens, right? And everything we do is designed to help our clients stay consistent. We do that in three ways. Number one, we come up with a plan for them that's catered and customized to them. Number two, we really address what we call their MPH, their mindset, psychology, and habits, their relationship with food, their relationship with success. And then, of course, we hold them accountable on a daily basis.
What are those mindsets that are the most popular? That's what I'm curious about. Like the most common mindsets that are negative towards fitness that people have.
So fear of success, as we talked about, fear of failure, of course. You know, I don't want this to be another thing that doesn't work. And one of the things I've learned in that is it's really important to offer your customers or clients hope, right? And I think this, again, is applicable to business. I mean, the similarities between fitness and business is endless. And hope is a formula, right? Number one, it's having a clear and defined objective. So you have that objective. Your customer or client signs up, you have that objective. Number two is having a plan to reach that objective. And number three, it's having a plan that you actually believe you can follow. So we've come up with a plan for the client and we make sure they feel comfortable with the plan from the start. So we're able to offer that hope and kind of counter that fear of failure. But that's another one. All or nothing thinking is really popular in terms of like people just feel like if they can't be quote unquote perfect, then why bother? So this black or white thinking, this all or nothing thinking, that's a big part of what we help our clients overcome. Self-sabotage. So I would say those are the top reasons or top mindsets that detract from people's success.
The self-sabotage thing is really piquing my interest because I feel like there's a lot there that I haven't thought of. We do a lot of coaching, and the thing that I'm seeing missing the most on the business side in our listenership, and I resonate with this personally, is it's easy to have the goal, relatively speaking. You know, I did $1 million in revenue. I want to do two. The hard part comes with the hand waving at the plan. I feel like the plans get really soft because the goal's kind of soft. The goal's like 2 million. But then the actual plan to get there, I'm starting to scrutinize those in our clients. And I feel like we are getting a ton of value out of that. Because in the past, people would say, well, I want to get to $2 million in revenue. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hire an Instagram guy. And like that was the plan. And I would let that go. I'd be like, cool. Yeah. Instagram's great marketing. You should do it. Call me when you get to two.
Right.
as a coach, I'm seeing that that's not good enough. Essentially, I'm curious if you see the same on the plan. Seems to be where all the action is.
Yes. And the plan is where the magic happens. I think it's really important to have a crystal clear objective, but also a crystal clear plan. It's very easy to hide behind big plans, right? It's very easy to kind of talk this talk. But what it comes down to is like execution. What are you going to do on a weekly, monthly, quarterly basis? I think for a lot of people, though, when it comes to fitness, it's also, why do you want to achieve that goal? Why does it matter? And I mean, the why is truly important, though. Because if you don't have a compelling why, then it's going to be very hard to follow through.
You've been in business for 17 years. Can you just give us a sketch of what the business looks like from a size perspective so that the rest of the conversation makes sense?
Yeah. So very quickly, I left my full-time job at Ernst & Young in 2007 to pursue my dream of helping people stay healthy and fit. It was me in the beginning. Now we have about 75 coaches that are incredible at what they do. We have an executive team of 5. I'm extremely grateful to get to do what I do every day and to impact people's lives on their health and fitness.
Incredible. Who's the executive team? Can you talk about it from an org chart perspective? And why do you call them executives?
Well, I guess because we have our coaches and they're in the business working with their clients. And then the executive team is more working. Of course, I still work with some clients. Haley works with some clients, but we're also working on the business. There's John, who's our CTO. So he, you know, handles all of our tech and lots of other stuff. There's Jeremy, who is our marketing guy. There's Haley, who is our head coach, and Lori, who helps with coaching as well. And then there's me. So,
gotcha. With that, let's dig into pricing a little bit. One of the things I was asking around about you, and some people were saying, it's interesting how you've changed your pricing over the years. One of the biggest challenges we face is figuring out where the pricing should be in the first place, thinking about that relative to our delivery costs, and then finding ways to raise our prices over the years. Can you walk us through, like, what was your first price point? What was the first inkling that you might have needed to evolve that?
So the first price point was $75 for 6 weeks of daily coaching back in 2007. It was just me. And for me, the real reward, not to sound all cheesy here, but it's like getting to do the work I love. That is the reward. And I think that's one of the reasons why I've been able to do this for so long. But it was $75 for 6 weeks of coaching, daily coaching. So I started the business in February of 2007. By April of 2007, a few months later, a lot of the people that had started on the 6 week program were wanting to re-up, right? And that's where the idea of turning it into a monthly membership came into play. It was like, well, instead of just this one-time thing, how can we turn this into a monthly membership? So we turned it into a monthly membership in April of 2007. And based on demand and supply, like it was only me, I raised the price to $100 for 4 weeks. And I was very nervous to do that. And then we kept that for a while. And then the next big increase, I think we moved to $149 a few years later. And then the next big increase was $249 many, many years later. And that was a make or break point because that's when we really started building out our coaching team. And that was more of just out of necessity. Whereas if people weren't willing to pay $249, then this business isn't going to work the way we were building it because I had to pay and I want to pay our coaches well. So that was a big moment. And I think one of the reasons why I had confidence in doing that though was people were saying like, you're not charging enough. We had customers and clients telling us all the time, like for what I'm getting, this is not enough. And I was hearing that multiple times every week.
Wow.
So that really gave me the confidence that like, all right, you know what? I think we can bump this up.
Now we're at $299. Tell me about the higher tiers and how those came about because we also have a $599 and an $899. And I'm curious about your expectation about how clients move throughout those tiers.
The core component of the program is each day clients are sharing what they ate in our app. And then every single day their coach is writing back with personalized feedback. You're getting that with both plans.
So I'm like sending you my chicken dinner and like being accountable to another human being. So
right.
It's like a big brother situation where like, I know if I eat this, I'm going to have to tell you guys about it.
Right. And every single day, your very own coach who you have your initial phone consultation with is writing back with personalized feedback, suggestions, and encouragement. So that daily accountability, encouragement, coaching makes all the difference. So every plan has that. The only difference is the more expensive tier plan has daily phone calls as well. So we always had two plans for a while. And then recently we introduced the third plan. So we had the daily interaction through the app. And then we also had that plus daily phone calls. And we just found that some people wanted to talk on the phone, right? They just wanted that extra level of support, the extra level of accountability. That's why we offered it. And we felt, you know, what we were charging for that for a while was very reasonable. And then recently we introduced a middle tier plan where it's instead of daily phone calls, it's 3 phone calls a week. So that's where we have the gold for $299, the platinum for $599, and the diamond plan for $899.
It's nuts, Adam. I've been hanging out with customers of yours when they get the phone call. And I hear them like going through like, well, I did the linguine thing and then I did this and I had a piece of pizza, you know, I'm going to, it's interesting. It's utterly fascinating and quite unique, actually. I think it's a really cool model. Do you have a sense for a science behind how this pricing is based on labor? So for example, like in my recruiting company, we try to stick to a labor efficiency ratio of 2. So it means if like we take our gross profit and we divide it by our direct staffing costs, and we try to keep that to 2. So if I'm going to pay my coach $10, it means I need to gross $20 from my client in order to keep the money going. Do you have any kind of perspective around that?
It's funny. When I first started this, one of my buddies told me that the unit economics of what we're doing doesn't make sense at all. And while I appreciated it, I totally ignored it because I think I would have had to charge a lot more or pay our coaches a lot less. And I ignored it. So we don't have much of a formula for that. I mean, yes, we do make money on our clients. Of course, the business does. But I don't know. I've always run this business. How would I want to be treated? Would I want to be treated as a client, as a coach? And it's worked well. So to answer your question, we don't necessarily have a formula that we try to adhere to. Like, oh, if we introduce this, we have to, you know, our profit has to be that minus that or whatever. No.
I wrote that down. That was one of the most interesting things when I was digging around the web about you is that moment. I wonder if you could bring us to that moment when your friend came to you and was like, what you're doing is not going to work. I wonder if you just bring us into that, how you took that feedback and what you learned.
Yeah. I mean, he looked at business as a very cut and dry thing. And it was either this is going to work or it's not going to work. And no one wants to run a business that isn't profitable, that loses money. But I guess I ignored it because for me, coming from my background of working at Ernst & Young, my dream was to get to do what I love every day. That was the goal. So I guess I fully ignored it in that, like, I believed in what we were doing. My thesis back then, and I was very strong on it and very obviously bullish on it, was that for the most part, people know what to do. We know what's good for us. We know what's not good for us for the most part. The real question is, why can't they do it? And back then when I was starting my body tutor, no one was offering accountability. Everyone was offering courses and knowledge. But what they quickly realized was that no one was following through on their courses and knowledge. So I just really believed in what we were doing. And that's carried me a long way.
You talked about the difference between a mission and an opportunity.
For me, this is a very mission-driven company. I grew up with a very sick father. I witnessed him having a heart attack. We drove him to the hospital. A few days later, he had triple bypass surgery. Later that year, he was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And seeing him deteriorate mentally and physically throughout the years until he passed away was obviously very hard. I didn't grow up with a father who was around, who could play with me. And I learned early on that health is true wealth, right? Like without it, nothing means anything. So this is been in me since 7th grade when that all started. I've just been so passionate about health and fitness and so passionate about helping others achieve their health and fitness because, again, it's the one thing that impacts every other aspect of life. So a mission-driven company is when you would likely do it even if you weren't getting paid, whereas an opportunity is ultimately you're chasing money, right? I think a good example of opportunity-driven businesses are, we all remember Groupon. Groupon was going absolutely gangbusters. And I think at one point there was thousands and thousands of clones of Groupon. I don't necessarily think these people were on a mission to offer discounted services to people. I think they just saw it as an opportunity. And there's nothing wrong with that. But the problem is when you chase opportunities, you're often always on to the next opportunity. Whereas when you're chasing a mission, this is my life's work. And when I say that, I mean that. Like, I will be doing this hopefully until the day I die. Everything we do is designed for very, very long term. We're thinking in decades here, not in months or years. So when you chase a mission-driven business, I just think you have a massive advantage over people who are chasing opportunities.
So this brings us to the challenge of a mission-driven business, which is something you alluded to earlier, which is that you are so passionate about it and expert that it can be hard to let go of the product. But now you have 75 coaches. There are these phone calls going out. There's people like me eavesdropping on these phone calls. You have no control over this. It's happening. You've perpetrated the crime. It's out there in the world. Can you bring us back to the moment when you met your head coach? And I want to walk through that story because it's something I'm trying to emulate. And I'm hoping you can shed a little light on that process and how you let go.
It was very easy for me to let go because my son at that time was just born. And I was 6-7 years into the business. It was basically, am I going to be working every day, all day long, coaching people? Or am I going to end missing out my son's childhood? And the answer was very quickly, no, I'm not doing that. Right. And it was a big switch though for me because I love being a practitioner. I love helping people. And the switch for me was, A, I don't want to be doing that. And B, what if I coached coaches? What if I helped coaches become world-class or hire world-class coaches and help people in a different way? So for me, the forced decision was, do I want to be spending all day, every day in front of a computer, missing out on my son's life? Or do I want to help more people, not be the bottleneck, serve more people, which I really felt compelled to do? So it became kind of easy. And I was really on the hunt for someone that I could fully trust, someone who I thought was even better than me. And I had met Haley and it was like, all right, I think we have an opportunity here. Let's build this out. So it was almost like that deadline of my son is being born. We got to get this fleshed out and built out.
One of the challenges that people face, Adam, is that they can't afford somebody who can do it better than them. How did you overcome that challenge?
So we have, there's Haley, there's John, there's Jeremy. I never encourage people to work for free because you shouldn't. But for example, John was a client of ours. We helped him lose weight. He loved the service. And he just started helping me. And he felt so compelled to help me that he was basically working for free. I was paying him very, very little. Same thing with Jeremy. Jeremy was a client, loved the service, started to help me out. Haley, same thing. She just, like, I had met her. Someone introduced me to her. It was actually one of our clients who was like, you got to meet this woman. She's amazing. And she was very drawn to the mission. So that certainly helped. But I also do remember there was a time where John was helping me kind of part-time. And he had a full-time job and it was a point where it was either I'm going to hire you full-time or he's going to go to his job, like stay there. And that was very scary. And the first year we probably made less money because I was paying him. But again, I think that's where it's like the mission comes into play. I wanted to serve more people and I knew we needed him to do that.
It's tough to make less money though.
It's tough to make less money. You go from not paying someone to suddenly you're paying them every month a good amount of money. That's certainly scary, but I felt it was inevitable that we would grow and be able to absorb his costs and it would help us grow way more.
Talk to me about the 75 coaches. How do you recruit, train, and retain them?
So at this point, we're very lucky in that we're getting over a dozen applicants every week now. And I always thought that was going to be the biggest issue is finding amazing coaches, right? Because I know we're only as good as our coaches. I know that. So thankfully, we're getting the applicants. We don't have to seek them out. Haley is incredible at what she does. She filters through the applications. You know, we're looking for certain types of personalities. We're looking for people who obviously have the knowledge, who obviously have the pedigree and the expertise. But we're also looking for people who understand behavior change and can help someone get from where they are to where they want to be. She handles that. That at the very end, once she like kind of whittles it down to people she really likes, I'll speak with them. And in terms of retaining them, we try to treat our coaches extremely well. We treat them like they're part of the MBT family. We try to pay them really well. We have all sorts of incentives for them and mentorship programs. So thankfully, that's really helped.
How does it work in terms of compensation for coaches?
So they're getting paid per client per month.
So they get pieced off a section of the membership fee that goes direct to them. It's like a direct labor math. I like that.
Yeah.
So they can do it while they kind of participate in the gig economy. Like they can continue to be a personal trainer or have a full-time job, but also start to gradually build up their clientele with you.
Yeah. And some do that. Some are full-time with us. So it depends on the coach. But yeah, absolutely.
In these sorts of services businesses, often, and we talked a lot about your product, your mission, but often the big nut to crack is the demand one. It's like in my services business, it's like I can flip on the switch of a new price tier tomorrow or start sourcing candidates in new countries in a few weeks. But to get 10 new leads every week, that's a whole nother challenge. It's not clear to me on my research how MyBodyTutor has become such a behemoth in the marketplace. What's your perspective on that? How do you guys generate demand for the service?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a busy space. You just go on Instagram and there are freaking biceps everywhere.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And I mean, I could start, like, the concept of MyBodyTutor is relatively simple, which is accountability coaches, assuming you have tons of people ripping off your business model over the years. So your competitive edge has to have something to do with the brand, the trust, the quality, but then also that people are paying attention to what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, I think number one, being around for 17 years does help, right? I mean, there's no doubt about that. There's a reputation. We have a flawless reputation when you look us up. We treat our clients incredibly well and we're obsessive over getting them results. And I think when you continue to get people results and you find people that truly care, results become inevitable and those people become a walking billboard for you. And it just, when you're in business for that long, every year that goes by, we have more people that we've served and helped and there's more people that know about us and it becomes this wonderful flywheel effect.
It's like a walking washboard. I know a bunch of them talking about your service all the time.
Yeah. We meet weekly. We have quarterly reviews. We have yearly reviews. We don't have revenue goals. Our only goals are how do we level up our coaching? How do we find more world-class coaches? That's it. Because we know that if we do that, everything else will take care of itself.
That's interesting. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. The numbers that matter in your business. That executive team, you just indicated a meeting pulse. Bring us into that world of what it's like to work on the team. How often do you guys meet and what do you talk about? I know this is a wonky question, but we really care about this stuff because for a lot of us, we don't have a corporate background or we're not like serial entrepreneurs. We're working on one or two businesses our whole lifetimes. And so sometimes it feels arbitrary how we set these things up. Like, do we meet every day? Do we meet every week? Bring us in a little bit into the rhythm of how you run the business.
Yeah. So for a while, we did not have meetings. We would just communicate via email once in a while. We'd have phone calls. But Brandon Turner, who is, I don't know if he's Beardy Brandon on Instagram, great follow, great guy. He was a client, helped him lose 40 pounds, loved it. And he is a big supporter of what we do. And he highly recommended EOS and, you know, the book, what is it, Traction. And it's very compelling. And so because of that, we started instituting these weekly, quarterly, and yearly meetings. And, you know, in the meetings, we'll talk about, in terms of like the numbers we pay attention to, of course, we pay attention to how many people signed up, how many people canceled. We pay attention to the amount of success stories. I think a lot of entrepreneurs become entrepreneurs because they want to be their own boss. They want to work for themselves. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't like meetings, actually. They just want to kind of be in the weeds working. But I would say having a weekly meeting, and that's the cadence for us, has been transformative for us. Just even just see on a Zoom, we all see each other, we talk. It's been so helpful.
And no agenda? You just show up?
So each week, we're reviewing our rocks. So each quarter, we set rocks for the company. So we're reviewing those rocks. We're reviewing the numbers. We're talking about any issues that might come up. But it's really just more about that community of us meeting every week and talking.
Are you the CEO?
Yeah.
What's that mean to you?
I guess it means I'm the leader of the company. I set the direction. I'm the biggest ambassador of what we do. But at the end of the day, I just feel like someone who's just working on MyBodyTutor and we're building this together. It doesn't feel all that special or anything. It's just another day.
Tell me about that day. I want to know the details of what it's like to run your business and how you allocate your time. Because you do have a family, and as your business gets bigger, it's a weird duality happens where I feel like larger businesses are typically a little easier to run. But yet when you close your laptop and you walk away, there's kind of more things happening behind your back in a bigger business. So this is this weird paradox of like, there's more things happening under your brand out in the world, yet you're working less.
Yeah, this is probably the next phase for us is, or answering this question is, do I want to step away a little bit or do less? But like, I love what I do. So like, I mean, a typical day, you know, I have two kids now. I have Zachary, who's 10, Asher, who's 7. I want to spend as much time with them as possible, right? So in the morning, I wake up, I hang out with them until they go to school. They leave for school around 8:30. Then 8:30 comes, you know, I get to work. I'll do work for about 4 hours. Then I'll exercise.
What is work?
This is probably not a great answer and probably not what you want to hear, but I'm very much in the business. So for example, and maybe this is one of the reasons why we're successful, my personal cell phone number, this is my personal cell phone.
He's holding up an iPhone, everybody.
Yeah. Our phone number is all over the website. If you call that, it goes to my personal cell phone. We don't have a customer support team. We don't have someone, an answering service. It goes directly to me. You can also say call, text, or email us. That email goes directly to me. I love talking with prospective clients because I love what we do. I'm very passionate about it. So a lot of what I do is I'm dealing with prospective clients. I'm talking with people so people can book a call with me before they join if they have any questions about the program. That's a lot of my day is talking with prospective clients.
So sales, essentially you run sales. That makes sense. I mean, yeah. I think that's one of the last thing founders give up is sales. And it makes sense why. You're the ambassador. You can speak. Hell, it's hard to get on this phone call without signing up. You know, tell you. So why would you give it up?
Right. And I love it. But maybe to get to the next level, and I'm not even sure if we do want to get to the next level, I might have to give it up or we'd have to hire someone else. And that's something where I wouldn't say we're struggling with. It's just at this point, I'm happy the way things are. So I'm very hands-on, very in it in terms of sales. Yes, that's a good way. I'm the head of sales.
Got it. So for the 4 hours, a lot of it's sales. And then what part of that beginning part of your day are you managing other team members or doing other details in the business?
I would say about a quarter of it, I'm talking with Haley. We're talking about if there's any client cases that are interesting that she might need some input on, or a coach, if they have a question, they'll usually reach out to her, but sometimes she'll loop me in. But for the most part, I mean, Haley's got that unlocked. I mean, she's world-class at what she does. But I would say, you know, sometimes I'm dealing with that, but mostly it's sales.
And then the rest of your day, you go work out after 4 hours, I'm assuming?
Go work out about an hour, hour and a half, have lunch, and then I get back to work. Then the kids come home by 3:45. And then from 3:45 to, you know, 7:38, I'm with them. And then I'll have dinner with my wife. Sometimes I'll have it, you know, she might eat earlier, but I always sit with my kids. And then I like to work when they're sleeping. So from like 8:30 or 9 o'clock to 12 or 1, that's when I do some more work.
That's the parent sweet spot. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. I don't want to miss time with my kids. That's really important to me.
You are relentless about getting results for your clients. I'm curious about, are there things that you guys see in prospective clients that are churn risks? It's like, oh man, this cohort of clients, they're the first ones to go. And I'm wondering how you guys identify that and then deal with it. Do you filter them out at the beginning or do you toss them into the program hoping that they'll overcome that challenge?
Every client who signs up, they fill out a questionnaire and we review the questionnaire and we pair them with a coach. We're personally reviewing the questionnaire or personally pairing them with a coach. And there's no doubt we flag some clients. I would say the people that we flag are people who are looking for instant results. It's often sometimes what we think we know that gets in the way versus what we don't know. People who think they know everything. Our service does filter people in that. If you're signing up for a service, you're raising your hand and essentially saying, hey, I need help staying consistent, right? And that to me is the biggest challenge in health and fitness is a lack of consistency, right? Everything we do is designed to help our clients stay consistent. So for the most part, we're getting really great clients in that they're self-aware enough to say, you know what? I need help. I'm not staying consistent. But every now and then it's, you know, someone who expects instant results, or they just have unrealistic expectations. Those are the types of people that we watch out for. And, you know, it's our job as coaches to talk about their expectations, but also manage them as well.
Yeah. What do you do when you're worried that someone might churn? Do you have a save program, or do you just let them go?
We pride ourselves in holding our clients accountable, and we want to know if someone wants to cancel, why. We found that some people were blaming their lack of commitment or their lack of motivation as to why they wanted to quit. So we created an email series where we actually asked them their definition of commitment. So they're getting an email early on in their journey that says, hey, how would you define commitment? And we give them all sorts of different definitions our clients shared. So we're basically bringing up the objection before it happens. Then we found people were saying they don't have motivation. We did the same thing. And it was interesting because as we did that, people weren't canceling or wanting to cancel because they didn't feel committed anymore, because they didn't feel motivated. Some people say, you know, they run into finance issues. All right. So then we offer less expensive plans. Often it's never about the money, because one thing I've learned is if it's not about the money when they sign up, then it's usually never about the money, right? If someone's willing to pay $299 up front, then it rarely is actually about the money, and something else. And we really try to get to the root of the issue because we want to help.
Did they ever say, well, I don't have enough time?
Yes.
How do you deal with that one? I feel like that's a common one.
I think we all create these narratives and these beliefs and stories in our head to, again, protect ourselves from doing the easiest thing of all, which is nothing. And people who say time, 99% of the time, are perfectionists, because they're either thinking, if I can't be perfect, quote unquote, and do an hour workout every day and eat, quote unquote, perfectly, then I'm not going to do anything at all. And for these people, they're using time as a way to rationalize, or as a way to kind of let themselves off the hook of not being perfect. And that's the challenge, is if I can't be perfect, why bother? So we kind of dig in. Not bothering at all on your health and fitness isn't necessarily the way to go. So it's always about scaling back. And we really try to challenge them on, it's like, all right, well, I understand you might want to work out for an hour. What can we do every day for 10 minutes or 15 minutes? And for them, it's like so uncomfortable to fathom that. And for some people, this might not resonate at all. For some people who are perfectionists, it definitely hits it on the head, because again, for some people, it's either I want to exercise for an hour or I'm not going to do anything, right? I had one client who scorned at the idea of jogging for 30 minutes every day because she felt if she couldn't train for a marathon, then it wasn't worth doing anything.
That's really interesting. One of the things people say about you, despite what you've described today, is that you seem not busy or unrushed, available and thoughtful. And yet the data of the call today is like, I take all my sales calls. I spend a chunk of time every day with my kids. I run this very successful company with over 80 people involved on the payroll. Do you have a perspective on why people might perceive you that way?
That's wonderful. I mean, I love to hear that. I think one of the best gifts you can give someone is your time and attention. You know, I think it's even on a sales call, for example, like people are almost like very considerate, right? And they're usually 15 minute calls. And so many times it's like getting the end of the call and people are like, well, I know you have to go. And I'm always like, I promise you the phone doesn't cut off automatically. If any other questions, let me know. Let's talk. I've structured my life to be able to talk with the people that matter to me and not have to rush. I remember how I felt when I was working at Ernst & Young. Everything was just a rush going from this to that. And I guess I never really thought about it that way. I guess I don't have to rush. Again, I think it's the way I'd want to be treated. And that's how we try to treat other people, and how I try to treat other people is I want to be able to fully hear you out.
That's interesting. I even noticed in the way you interacted coming onto the show, it was like very thoughtful and conscientious versus a lot of other guests just have a different attitude about it. And I thought it was interesting given how busy you are, how much you have going on. And I think it goes a long way. It's obviously you have a mission-driven company, you're passionate about what you do, but it's not that common. Most people are just doing it to pursue the opportunity.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And so many of our clients often leave and say, like, thank you for caring so much. And we do. We care a lot. Everything we talk about, everything we meet about is just how do we improve our coaches? How do we improve the service? Like, we really, really do care. And I think when you genuinely care, A, it's just a massive advantage, but B, it also just shines through and people appreciate that. Yeah. When you have a mission-driven business, it's easy to care.
Adam, my final question is for the 20% of our audience who don't yet have businesses. Most of us listening, we run businesses like yours. But for the 20% of us, we might be working at an accounting firm thinking about making the jump. What's the advice you typically give to people that are thinking about making that transition? They might even have families and they see entrepreneurship as something that is super appealing, but also risky.
So I quit Ernst & Young cold turkey. And back then I didn't have kids. I didn't have a family. I didn't have a wife, whatever. So it was easier for me to do that. But I think you don't necessarily have to give up comfort and security, which is what you usually have when you have a full-time job, to pursue your dreams. I would recommend people moonlight, do it at night, do it on the weekends, and start from there. But don't let this idea of I have to create this massive company get in the way. I always like to say small is the new big. And I think one of our mutual friends is Noah Kagan, right? One of the reasons why I love his book, Million Dollar Weekend, so much is it gets to the root of it. It forces you to take action. And I think it just is very easy to put yourself behind big plans and big ideas. Start small, start at night, start on the weekends. You don't necessarily have to burn the bridges and you don't have to give up comfort and security because it's really hard to do your best work when you're worried about putting food on the table.
I love that. Adam Gilbert, we appreciate you taking the time with us here today on the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Tropical MBA podcast. You can go to tropicalmba.com, get access to hundreds of back episodes and all kinds of other goodies. Load up your iPod. That is the cheapest way to fly business class on your next international flight. We will see you next Thursday morning, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.